It shows that these stories which I tell are just universal. They happen wherever you are. There's so many stories of loving kindness which save you from great injury. There's one of those stories in the book about the power of loving kindness of one of the monks who has been through KL, but I won't tell you who he is. And many years ago he was meditating in the forest when a big king cobra came to visit him. I don't know if you've ever seen a king cobra. I've only seen one when I was in Thailand. It was one of the occasions when the forest was electric. Something was happening there and I could pick it up. I turned a corner of one of the forest paths. And across the path, which was about 4 foot or 1.2 meters wide, there was a big black shape. It was as thick as my thigh. I could not see the head, nor could I see the tail, but it was moving quite fast through the undergrowth. But being a scientist, I estimated its length by counting the path widths. 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, about 7 path widths. I saw a snake which was at least 8.4 meters long. When I told the villagers, they said yes. That is a king cobra. They had a word for that in the northeast of Thailand. In their local dialect, they had a word which translates into the one-step snake. When I asked them, why do you call it the one-step snake? They said, because once it bites you, that's all you have left to live. One step. It is extremely venomous. And I have only seen it once. But one day, this monk, together with many of his disciples, on Tudong in the jungles, were meditating in the evening at dusk. And the king cobra came. Slithered right up to this monk. Raised its head. Opened its hood. And went to strike this monk. What would you do? It's a waste of time running. Those snakes run faster than you. What this monk did, he raised his hand and patted the king cobra on the head, saying in Thai, thank you so much for coming to visit me. What he discovered is that king cobras, they like having their head patted. And then after having his head patted for a few minutes, the king cobra pulled in its hood, put its head down, and went to go and see one of the other monks. And the other monk said, go back to see him, not me. The power of metta is so strong that even king cobras will not harm or hurt you. The animals look to you as their refuge. That human beings will protect you. That kindness metta is your greatest insurance. A story I read recently of this man who broke into the temple in the middle of the night. He was a burglar, knowing that the donation box held much money. He broke in there at night time, and the abbot of the temple was disturbed. He went to check out what the noise was, and the burglar saw him. Took out his gun. Open the box or I'll shoot you. The abbot had no choice. He said, certainly, sir, I'll open the box. You can have all the money you want, but before you take it, when was the last time you've eaten? There is some food and some drink over there. Please take it before you go. Yeah, said the burglar. Quickly opened the box, but he was fumbling because he was scared. I'll open it for you, said the monk. you go and get yourself something to eat. And the burglar took something to eat as the abbot opened the box. And the burglar took the money and ran off. He was caught some time later and jailed. But for other crimes. But when he was released from jail, he came back to that monastery. He came back to the abbot and said, "Do you remember me? Many years ago, I came into your temple to rob the donation box. But I realized I took the wrong thing. What I really wanted was your compassion and kindness. Now I've come to steal that from you. Please ordain me as a monk and teach me how to be kind like you were to me." Because that's what people really want. Not the money. They want the kindness and the compassion. Because that's the compassion and kindness which will not only give you friends, but will also solve the problems in your daily life. Whenever you meet someone and give them compassion, it's always so powerful. I said I was going to tell you a supernatural story about compassion. And I don't think you've heard this one because I only heard it myself at the end of last year. There's a monk, a Thai monk, but again I won't tell you who it is. Recently, he went to visit the United States. When he got to the United States, the monks found out he had a diplomatic visa for the rest of his life to enter the United States. We wondered how on earth, in these times of national security, does the US government issue such a visa, a diplomatic visa for life, to a Buddhist monk? So they asked him, "Where did you get this from? How did you get this?" And he told the following story. Last year, in Texas, in Houston, in the headquarters of NASA, the space agency, they were installing a new multi-million dollars mainframe computer, which they need to do to keep a high computing facility for that great organization. It cost them, as you would imagine, many, many millions of dollars. And when they started to install the software, or the hardware, whatever you call it, I'm a low-tech monk, so I don't know really what I'm talking about, but they're doing something. And whatever they were doing, they could not get it to work. Just a computer would not work. Now this was NASA. So they got the most experienced geeks from throughout the whole of the United States to try and fix up the problem. Expert after expert came. But no one could make the computer work. Until one of the experts, one of the IT professionals, said, "Well, if we can't get it to work, perhaps it's something supernatural." So, they decided to try and fix the computer by another means. This Thai monk happened to be in the Thai temple in Houston at the time. So they invited him in to the mainframe computer room in the headquarters of NASA in Houston. And he went into that room. He did some chanting and his favorite metta meditation. And when he came out of the meditation, the computer worked perfectly. And as a result, in gratitude, they arranged, they used their contacts to get him a diplomatic visa for the rest of his life to come into the United States whenever they needed a computer fixed. True story. Seeing his visa. Now this monk, I'm not sure if I should say this, but I've started already. When he arrived in the United States, now we, underneath our robe, sometimes we wear like an underrobe. We call it like an angsu in Thailand. In his underrobe, he had many pockets. Maybe 20 or 30, 40, no, lots of pockets. I don't know why, he's a bit of an eccentric monk, but he carries tools with him. Spanners, wrenches, screwdrivers, and even long knives. He arrived at San Francisco Airport. He was met by one of my best friends as a monk. And when they saw what he'd just been carrying in the cabin of the aircraft, three long knives, a few screwdrivers, wrenches, you name it, he had it. The monk's eyes popped. You can't take that on the cabin. How on earth do you get through the security screens, those little electronic doors which you have to go through? So it's easy, he says. Every time I go through, I do metta meditation, and it never beeps. We think, oh no, please don't do that again. If it beeps once, you'll be in jail for years. But it's a true story again. Sometimes the power of metta meditation is incredibly strong. Now, if you can do that with these X-ray security machines, you can interfere with them so you can take whatever you want on board. Remember, it's only kind people can do that. So anyone with bad motives, they'll get caught every time. If you've got such degree of power from compassion, if you can do that with a machine, imagine what you can do with your own body. Any sickness, any pain, you can metta it away, having such compassion, which is what I've done several times. If I have some ache or a pain, which is sometimes driving me crazy, sometimes what I say, pain, the door of my heart is open to you. Come in. Because most of pain is wanting to get rid of something. Wanting to run away where pain doesn't exist. Wanting to get rid of something which is a part of nature. If you have loving kindness, and you practice strong loving kindness in the moment, you can even do it to the pain in your own body. And you'll be amazed at how that pain can vanish in an instant. One of the stories in my book from my own life, one of the first times I did this, was when I was a young monk in Thailand, and I got a toothache in the middle of the night. I don't know why it is, but the worst pains come in the middle of the night. At that time, there was no aspirin or Panadol or any painkillers in our monastery. Nor was there any phone, not even a landline, let alone mobiles. They hadn't been invented yet. We were in a remote monastery. And we were supposed to be forest monks. We were supposed to endure no matter what happened. So there I was, trying to endure. But I wasn't such a tough monk after all. It was driving me crazy. I decided to try and meditate my way out of that pain. I sat down, crossed my legs, and focused on my breath. Breathing in, ow, breathing out. It was just too painful. I just could not get rid of this exploding pain in my jaw. When sitting meditation didn't work, I tried walking meditation, which some of you have seen. I had to stop that because I wasn't walking meditation. I was running meditation. When you're in pain, you can't do anything slowly. The next thing I tried was doing some Buddhist chanting. Because sometimes this chanting has got magical power. I thought I'd do the chanting to get rid of the pain. I didn't really believe it, but I was desperate. I'd try anything. And I had to stop the chanting. Because I realized if I carried on, I was shouting it so loud, I'd wake up everybody, including the village 2 kilometers away. I couldn't do even chanting slowly. I was desperate and it was driving me crazy. And there are a few times in your life you may come across this phenomena. You can't stand it any longer, but there's nowhere to go. All of your strategies have been exhausted, but you just can't stand the pain a moment longer. There's only one thing you can do in such a situation. Instead of trying to get rid of the pain, you can accept it. Let it be. pain, the door of my heart is open to you. I'm not trying to get rid of you anymore. I'll just be with you, kindly. When I did that, the most amazing thing happened. The pain disappeared. It vanished. And in its place was happiness, was peace, was bliss. The most unexpected experience you could imagine. And I just meditated very peacefully, had a small sleep for 1 or 2 hours, and woke up. I had a toothache when I woke up, but very slight. What I learned from that experience was that so much of pain is mental pain. Not the physical pain. But I don't want this. Why should I suffer this? This isn't fair. I don't want it. And that is countered by loving kindness. By instead of fighting and dismissing and trying to get rid of the contents of your day, you embrace it, allow it to be, make peace with it, and give it loving kindness. Pain, sickness, whatever's happening, the door of my heart is open to this. You have metta to the moment. By developing such strong loving kindness, it's amazing just how you can apply it to anything which you have to deal with in life, which is unpleasant. Obviously, you try and do other things first of all. If there was a Panadol in the cabinet, I would have taken that first. But nevertheless, I realize what you can do, even with physical pain, to open the door of your heart to it. Because one of the other stories in my book, which emphasizes this point, is a story adapted from the Buddha himself. And this was a story of the anger-eating demon. And I love this story because you can apply it to so many things. The story of the anger-eating demon goes like this. There was an emperor who was away from his palace, and while he was away, this terrible, ugly, stinking demon came in. And as he walked into the palace, he was so terrifying that all the ministers and the soldiers, the people who were supposed to be guarding the palace, froze in terror, allowing the monster to go right into the emperor's chair, into the throne, and sit there. And as soon as the monster sat in the emperor's chair, they woke up, they said, "Get out of here! Who do you think you are? That's our emperor's chair. You don't belong there. Get out!" And of those few angry words, the monster grew an inch bigger, more ugly, more smelly, and the language coming out of his mouth got worse. That made him even more upset. Some got out their swords, some threatened him with clubs, other ones shook their fists. "If you don't move your butt quickly, we'll carve it out with our swords," they said. They were so upset that this demon was in the emperor's chair. They started threatening and abusing him, but every unkind word, every unkind deed, even unkind thoughts, the monster grew an inch bigger, more ugly, the stench coming off him got worse, and his language got even more crude. This had been going on for some time when the emperor came back, and by this time, that demon was so big it took up half of the throne room. And it was so ugly, so terrifying, that even Steven Spielberg, with all his dream works, couldn't imagine anything so ugly. And his smell, the stench coming off his body, would even make a maggot sick. And the language, was worse than you'd hear in the seediest part of King's Cross in Sydney after Australia lost a cricket match. Now, the reason why this guy was the emperor was because he was smarter than everybody else. He saw this ugly, terrifying demon, and he knew what to do straight away. He said, "Welcome. Thank you for coming to visit me. Why have you waited so long to pop in? Has anyone got you anything to drink yet? We have ginseng tea. We have Earl Grey. We have orange juice. What would you like? And those few kind words, the demon grew an inch smaller, less ugly, less smelly, less offensive. And at that, everybody in the palace realized their mistake. So what did they do? They started being kind to the monster. Someone took hold of his feet and gave him a foot massage. Someone asked, do you want something to eat? How about a pizza? Monster size. And they were so kind to him, every kind word, deed or thought grew an inch smaller, less ugly, less smelly, less offensive. In a very short time, he was back to the size when he first came in. But they never stopped. They carried on with the kindness, with the metta, until he was so tiny, this demon, that one last act of kindness and the demon vanished completely away. That's how they got rid of the demon who came into the emperor's palace. When the Buddha told that story, it's in the Udana, he said, we call that an anger-eating demon. If you give it anger, it just gets bigger, uglier, smellier, and more offensive. There are many anger-eating demons in this world. For some of you, that might be your husband. You get angry at him, he gets bigger, he gets uglier, and this language certainly gets worse. But many of those anger-eating demons, your wife as well, she could be an anger-eating demon. For those anger-eating demons, you realize if you give them anger, the problem gets worse. And it's not just people. Cancers are notorious anger-eating demons. They're in your body, and you say, get out of here, you don't belong. When you feed such stress-produced growths with negativity, what do you expect? It gets bigger, more ugly, more smelly, more dangerous. There are many other anger-eating demons in this world. It can just be a state of mind. Some people get depressed. I don't want to be depressed. If you feed negativity to your depression, you literally get depressed about being depressed. And then you get depressed about being depressed about being depressed. And depressed about being depressed about being depressed about being depressed. And those of you who know depression know you go in the spiral ever downwards of depression. For those of you who are not in deep depression, I'm not talking about pinnacle depression, just mild depression. How about saying to yourself, depression, welcome. The door of my heart is open to depression. Come on, I can be your friend. You know for a start that when you're giving such positive energy to depression, it will get less and less and less. Because depression is something, again, which feeds on negativity. And instead we can give it compassion. This compassion, this loving kindness towards a moment is so powerful that it can heal so many things. I'm not just talking about saving you from bullets or being able to pat snakes. I'm talking about the problems if you're in your life. If you can't solve it, be kind to it. And you find it works so powerfully well. However, there are some situations in your life that you are in a bind. Because sometimes you can be helping other people, but forgetting about yourself. That's why I made sure I got to the toilet this time. The last time I was doing a seminar in Jakarta. At that particular time, the afternoon break, I headed off for the toilet, and I never made it. people stop me to ask questions. Take a photograph, sign your autograph. And I never made it to the loo. That was not being kind to me. I remember just recently, I was in Changi Airport, and unfortunately I know too many people in Singapore, so the people who actually worked in the airport followed me into the lounge. And they were asking me questions about meditation, talking about Dhamma, asking me to sign books, which I don't mind doing, but I really needed a rest. So I thought, I know, I'll go into the toilet. They won't be able to follow me in there. So I said, I'm just going into the toilet, I might be a while. Okay, take your time. Phew, I thought, I have some time out. But as soon as I got into the toilets in Changi Airport, the toilet attendant said, Ajahn Brahm! And I spent the next 20 minutes talking to the toilet attendant. But never mind. So sometimes I understand that metta has sometimes got to go to oneself as well as to others. It's not just sacrificing yourself for other people. It's not sacrificing other people and being selfish. And this is an important part about loving kindness in the moment. To include yourself as well. As I said earlier, there's two types of Buddhism sometimes people think in the world. I think also for the press. People think there's two types of Buddhism, Hinayana and Mahayana. Hinayana is you forget about other people, you're just concerned about your own enlightenment, your own happiness. Mahayana is you forget about yourself and you're just thinking of others. Both are wrong. If you just think about yourself and you've got no compassion for others, it does not work. If you just think about others and you've got no compassion for yourself, you get burnt out and sick. And I said last night that you can recognize this problem in many marriages. In a marriage, it's always one of the partners is Hinayana and the other one is Mahayana. One is thinking about themselves all the time and the other one is always thinking about the other. And both are dysfunctional. So please keep it that you never think about them, never think about me, always us. The compassion has to be directed into the correct place. So you're kind towards us. When you understand that you are also included. When we do our metta and we say, the door of our heart is open to all beings. May all beings be happy and well. Have you ever noticed when you say, may all beings be happy and well, you forget about one being, you? So the metta has to go towards you sometimes. Sometimes you say, I need time out. I need to rest. I need to look after myself. Why? So I can be of greater use to other people. I've been talking about this recently to businesses. To CEOs, because sometimes the reason why companies fail is not because they don't work long enough hours, but because they are inefficient. By that I mean, after you've worked for so long, your brain is not clear, you may go on your computer, but the things go wrong, you make too many mistakes, and you have to fix it up the following morning. There comes a time when you realize the best thing for yourself and for all others is to rest, to be kind, to have compassion in the moment. Someone sent me a cutting from an engineering journal from the UK where a firm, a company called Farrelly and Sons, which does building maintenance, looks after lifts, aircon systems and other things, trebled their turnover and doubled their profits within 12 months. And they won a prize. How they did this, trebling their turnover and doubling their profits, was to ban overtime. The company said after 5 p.m, everyone out. No taking work home. Out of here. That's all they needed to do. Turnover trebled, profits doubled, and actually the staff leaving went to zero. Can you imagine that if you're stressing out your workers, they'll just want to leave and go to another company? They just can't stand it. And you know just how long it takes to train another worker. When someone's there for a long time, they build up their relationships with the clients, they know exactly what their job is, they're trained. And it's one of the trouble with companies, they spend too much time training people, because once a person is trained, they leave to go somewhere else. They got no job satisfaction. Number two is that people are so negative about what they're doing, they don't really have their heart in their work. And number three, they work such long hours, it gets to the end of the day, their brain is stuffed, they're not really thinking clearly, and they make mistakes. So this company saw that compassion, wisdom, trebled their turnover, doubled their profits. And I think you can understand that. If the place where you work is caring about you, then you care about them. You want to do the right thing. You want to work hard to make that company which is looking after you even more prosperous. And that's what they found. So compassion is also part of modern business strategies. Without that compassion, that metta, that loving kindness, you just don't get your contracts. So this loving kindness is important. But if you are in a position of authority in your company, like I am the CEO of my monk factory, with franchises in many other parts of Australia, then you have to be careful. Because sometimes you think of one person in your community who's a troublemaker, who's causing difficulty for other monks. And people have said to me, Ajahn Brahm, you're so kind to that troublemaker, you don't kick him out. But by being so kind to him, you're being so uncompassionate to the rest of us. Because remember that compassion has to be balanced. Everybody in the equation. And sometimes in business, sometimes our compassion is lopsided. It goes to one person at the expense of other people. So when sometimes people say to me that they've got someone working for them who's not doing their job, but I can't sack them, that would give them such a hard time. I say, listen, it's a compassionate thing to sack them because it's compassionate to everybody else and also you as well. You've got to balance and see that big picture. When you see that big picture, you understand that yes, you have to make those tough decisions. It hurts one person, but it helps so many others. Compassion has to be that way. Has to be with wisdom. So when we have loving kindness towards the moment, loving kindness to what you have to experience, make it wise so everybody is taken into account. And it means that whatever you have to do in this life, when you give it loving kindness, you always have energy, care and joy. As the Buddha said, that loving kindness, like a mother loves her only child. If you love a child, you care for it. You have your attention on it. I've often noticed that mothers who have their child, they may carry in their arms through the shopping centres, and even though they're bustled this way and that, they never drop their child. They never go home and think, where did I leave my baby? Was it at the... Whatever you care for, you pay attention to, you look after, and it prospers. Which is why that loving kindness is the key to prosperity. We care. And I don't just do that to babies. I don't just do that to king cobras. You don't just do that to the people in my monastery. I practice loving kindness to whatever I have to do. I've been talking all day today. Sometimes people say, how can you do that? Just talking all day. Even at lunchtime, I was talking to the monks. After lunch, talking to the press, whatever it was. Even in the morning, in the car, talking in the car. When I go home, talking in the car back. I'll be talking, and even when I go to sleep, I'll probably talk in my sleep. But I put loving kindness to whatever I have to do. Whatever I have to do in my life. whether it's taking a funeral service or counseling someone. And even if I don't feel like doing it, I say, no, the door of my heart is open to whatever I have to do now. I give this moment metta. Embrace it. Enjoy it. Because this is the only moment I'll ever have. Life is what happens now. This is the only life you have. So what should we do with this moment called now? Please care for it. Have loving kindness to this moment. The door of my heart is open to whatever life is teaching me now. I enjoy a painful, not so painful, what I would like, what I don't like, doesn't matter. My door of my heart's open to this. You can't change the world. You can't change what you have to experience. You can't change the duties and jobs which come to you from time to time. But what you can change is your attitude to life. That is in your power. You can't change the people you meet, but you can certainly change your attitude to them. So we change our attitude and make it one of loving kindness, of metta. Whatever comes into my life, whatever I have to do, whatever experience arises, I will give that kindness. Life, the door of my heart is open to you. Whatever you are, however you feel, that is the key to enlightenment. Thank you. That's metta in the moment. Now we have the time for the last questions.